Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Tuesday, January 28th, 2020. Coming up this hour.
China expands travel restrictions as the death toll from the coronavirus passes 100.
Identified cases of the illness climb past 4,500 while Germany reports its first patient.
Hong Kong restricts flights and trains from the mainland while the U.S. raises its travel alert to China.
President Trump's lawyers will wrap up its defense in the impeachment trial today. Plus, investigators say there was no black box on Kobe Bryant's ill-fated chopper. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stashower in sports. Roger Federer pulled out another match, another five-setter at the Australian Open. The Devils, a shootout win in Ottawa.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak. On Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business App.
Good morning. I'm Karen Moscow.
And I'm Nathan Hager. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by IBKR, the professional's gateway to the world's markets. Their clients enjoy lowest cost access to stocks, options, futures, forex, and fixed income from a single integrated account. Learn more at IBKR.com.
And U.S. futures rebounding after yesterday's 1.5% decline for the S&P 500, 601 on Wall Street. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up 8 points this morning. Dow futures up 64. NASDAQ futures up 36. The DAX in Germany's down 0.2%. CAC in Paris, little changed. FTSE 100 up 0.1%. 10-year Treasury up 4/32. Yield 1.59%. Yield on the 2-year, 1.41%. NYMEX crude oil's down 0.5%. Or 28 cents at $52.87 a barrel. COMEX gold is up a dollar, up less than 0.1% at $15.84.70 an ounce. The euro 1.1019 against the dollar. The yen 108.85. Nathan.
And Karen, we begin with the latest developments on the coronavirus. The illness has now claimed more than 100 lives in China, while the number of identified cases has risen past 4,500. We get the very latest from Bloomberg's Derek Wallbank in Singapore.
The WHO is on the ground, is trying to figure things out. You have increasingly, I think, seen governments take a heightened response in, let's say, the last 2 days. Certainly the United States saying that they advised people to reconsider travel to China was a major move. That is not a thing that is done lightly. They also said flat out, don't go to Wuhan. If you're a watcher of U.S. travel advisories, that don't go to is a thing that's typically reserved for like North Korea. So that's the strongest level. And all of mainland China is under one step down from that strongest level.
Now, Germany's reported its first case of the virus. That's in addition to infections in France, Canada, and the U.S., though each country accounts for fewer than 10 cases.
Questions about detecting the virus are raising concerns among health experts. Dr. Celine Gounder is a professor at New York University's Department of Medicine.
It would appear that the virus was already spreading even as early as October and at least in November. So that means that the virus was spreading undetected. And so we're really only detecting it now because we're looking for it. We have tests for it that didn't really emerge until the end of December. The other key development is that it would seem that sometimes the virus may be transmitting by people who do not have symptoms at all. And that has yet to be confirmed by the CDC. But if you can't figure out who's infected and who might be transmitting, it's very difficult to contain this.
China now has travel restrictions in place for more than 50 million people, while Hong Kong is limiting flights from China. And several nations are negotiating with Beijing to evacuate diplomats, personnel, and citizens from parts of the country.
Now, the spread of the virus is being compared to the 2003 outbreak of SARS, though the impact could be broader. That's according to Thomas Bilecki, Senior Fellow for Global Health at the Council on Foreign Relations.
SARS, at its height, had 8,000 cases. We may already be well beyond that with this current virus. Again, the numbers aren't confirmed, but the modeling suggests we're certainly heading in that direction. So at some point, this conversation becomes less about how do we stop this epidemic from happening and from spreading, and more about what we do with the fact that we are in a ongoing pandemic.
Now, the World Health Organization is stopping short of using such dramatic language. So far, it's declined to label the virus an international emergency.
For the medical community, there's still much to learn about the coronavirus. Some are pushing for a vaccine, though the timeline for that treatment can be slow. Ian Lipkin is director of the Center for Infection and Immunity at Columbia University.
The challenges with vaccines are that it takes a long time to take them through safety testing and efficacy testing. Therefore, we should probably be thinking in terms of 6 months or more at the earliest before we would have any sort of a vaccine that could be produced and deployed.
Right now in the U.S., 110 people are being monitored for the virus. At last count, there were no new U.S. cases beyond the first five patients identified in the past week.
U.S. stock futures are rebounding from yesterday's declines, but there was no such recovery in Asia. Overnight, equities in the region dropped again in the face of the outbreak. Bloomberg's Juliet Sally joins us from Singapore with details. Good morning, Juliet.
Good morning, Nathan and Karen. South Korean stocks bore the brunt of the selling as the market resumed after the Lunar New Year break, with tourism and cosmetic stocks dumped, mirroring moves in Japan and Thailand on Monday. The KOSPI fell more than 3%, its biggest one-day drop since October 2018. Here in Singapore, the Straits Times Index had its biggest one-day drop since May, hit by its role as a barometer of trade flows and a proxy for markets when Hong Kong and China are closed. Elsewhere, the yuan stabilized after a sharp slide Monday that left it at its weakest level since December, and the yen gave up a sliver of recent gains. In Singapore, I'm Juliet Sali, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Juliet, thank you. There's concern the coronavirus could derail the global economy. The outbreak comes just as global growth had been stabilizing. And joining us live with the details is Bloomberg's John Tucker. Good morning, John.
And Karen, during the 2003 SARS epidemic, Chinese growth slowed 2% from the first to second quarter. Back then, China's GDP was 4% of the global economy. Today, it accounts for 17% as the world's second largest driver of global growth. It's already clear the virus is hurting consumption and tourism. Industrial production will also be impacted, just as factories would normally get back into full swing following the Lunar New Year holiday. That'll dent economies reliant on Chinese demand. Bloomberg Economics saying Asian neighbors and commodity exporters will be taking the biggest hit. I'm John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, John, thank you. S&P futures are higher this morning, up 8 points. Dow futures up 75. NASDAQ futures up 38. The 10-year Treasury up 5/32. The yield 1.59% and the euro 1.1018 against the dollar. Straight ahead, the latest world and national news. And this is Bloomberg.
Thanks, Karen. It's 6:07 on Wall Street, and Michael Barr is here with more on what's going on around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. President Trump's lawyers largely avoided the allegation in former National Security Advisor John Bolton's book that Trump tied aid to Ukraine to an investigation into the Bidens. Yesterday, they sought to undermine the House impeachment case, saying firsthand evidence is lacking in the House argument that Trump held up the release of military aid. However, Harvard Law professor Alan Dershowitz and other members of the president's legal team suggested that Trump's contact with Ukraine's president may have been inappropriate, but
nothing in the Bolton revelations, even if true, would rise to the level of an abuse of power or an impeachable offense. That is clear from the history. That is clear from the language of the Constitution.
Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer renewed his call to have witness testimony at the impeachment trial.
You can sit and listen to all these arguments, but one question looms overhead. If the president did nothing wrong, why is he so afraid of having witnesses and having documents?
Trump's lawyers will wrap up their third and final day of defense today. In Southern California today, the L.A. County Coroner's Office will continue the grim task of recovering remains from the weekend helicopter crash that killed NBA legend Kobe Bryant, his daughter, and seven others. There was no black box on board the Sikorsky S-76B. However, investigators have recordings from ground controllers to go through. Bloomberg's Bob Moon reports.
While the pilot was flying under visual flight rules that require he could see the ground, air traffic control recordings indicate controllers had switched to instrument flight rules, meaning the helicopter had to wait for guidance.
So I got a special VFR helicopter I need to get transitioning. He's been holding for about 15 minutes.
And the pilot made his way, tracking the freeways in sight below him.
118, and then we'll look around Van Nuys to catch the 101.
Flight data suggests the clouds closed in the final minute before the crash into the fogged-in hillside at around 185 miles per hour. The pilot's last transmission, according to a federal investigator, saying he was climbing to avoid a cloud layer. Bob Moon, Bloomberg Daybreak.
In a 5-4 vote, the Supreme Court cleared the Trump administration to start enforcing its new immigrant wealth test, designed to screen out green card applicants seen as being at risk of becoming dependent on government benefits. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and on Quick Take by Bloomberg, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Okay, Michael, thank you. Almost 6:10 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. Here's John Stashower.
Nathan, another Houdini act by Roger Federer, again in a tiebreaker at the Australian Open. He did it last week in the third round. He trailed in the fifth set tiebreaker 8-4. He was 2 points from losing and pulled it out. Now in the quarterfinals, facing American tennis Sandgren, Federer trailed 2-1, faced 7 match points in the fourth set tiebreaker, still won it 10-8, and then won the fifth set. And now the 38-year-old legend is under the semis, where it looks like he will hook up with Novak Djokovic. He right now leads the Canadian Milos Raonic 2-0. American Sofia Kenin is into the women's semis. She'll face top seed Ashley Barty. Lakers and Clippers will not play tonight in L.A. Laker organization said to be in too much grief. The game postponed. The guy who runs the Lakers is Rob Pelinka, and he was Kobe Bryant's agent, perhaps closest friend. Devils, a late goal to tie, and then a 4-3 shootout win in Ottawa. Last night in Miami, what they now call opening night at the Super Bowl, 49ers quarterback Jimmy Garoppolo has been to the Super Bowl before, but as a backup to Tom Brady in New England, and now he's the man. He has heard from Bill Belichick.
You know, he just, you know, congratulations, things like that. Just, you know, keep the thing going. But, yeah, Coach, we had a great relationship. He was always, you know, great guy, very, very honest, very straightforward, and I always appreciate him for that.
Pats perhaps wishing they still had Garoppolo. Tom Brady's return next year, not certain. 49ers and Chiefs getting ready to play on Sunday. Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. I'm John Stashower. Nathan?
Now, if you're getting ready to watch it in person, you're going to have to pay up big time. Prices for Super Bowl tickets are soaring in the run-up, with the average now close to $9,000 per seat. Ticketmaster says prices for tickets purchased through them are higher than they have been for any of the past 6 Super Bowls. And right now, the cheapest tickets that are offered through StubHub and SeatGeek in the secondary market are going for around $4,000. S&P futures are higher by 7 points. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by MBAF, CPAs and advisors dedicated to solving complex tax and accounting challenges, identifying opportunities, and helping businesses maximize profits. Learn more at MBAFCPA.com.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and on Quick Take by Bloomberg. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. This update brought to you by Eisner Amper, named Best Global Accounting Firm for the third year in a row by Hedge Week, a leading hedge fund industry publication. Learn more at EisnerAmper.com/FS. It is 6:17 on Wall Street, and Bloomberg Daybreak is out on customer terminals, bringing you all the news you need to start your day. Let's get a check of the latest headlines with Hannah George at the Bloomberg Daybreak desk. Good morning, Hannah.
Good morning, Karen. China's restricting travel to Hong Kong. It'll stop individuals, close some checkpoints, and curb flights, ferry, and train services in a bid to contain the coronavirus. Apple's rally will be tested when it reports earnings today. The bar is high with bullish expectations for iPhone sales and digital services. Sources say bonuses at JP Morgan will stay roughly flat for 2019. That bucks the trend, as Johnson Associates predicted year-end incentives would be down 5% on Wall Street. And revelations from John Bolton contain no impeachable offences. That's according to President Trump's lawyer, Alan Dershowitz, in remarks at the trial yesterday. The president's defence team wraps up its case today. For the news you need to start your day, check out Daybreak on your mobile phone on the Bloomberg Anywhere app. Karen.
Hannah, thank you. S&P futures up 3.5 points. They've been trimming their gains. Dow futures up 32. NASDAQ futures up 28. The DAX in Germany's down 0.25%. 10-year Treasury up 7/32, yield 1.58%, and the yield on the 2-year 1.40%. NYMEX crude oil's down 0.6%, or 31 cents at $52.83 a barrel. COMEX gold up about 0.2%, or $2.30 at $15.86.10 an ounce. The euro, 1.1016 against the dollar. British pound, 1.3011. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, more now on the impeachment trial. Harvard Law Professor Alan Dershowitz argued in President Trump's defense. Dershowitz says that a crime was required to impeach and remove a president, and the articles of impeachment against Trump cited no crime. We're learning more about the coronavirus in China. The death toll that is causing mounting global concern has risen. Bloomberg's John Tucker has more in this live report.
Michael, the coronavirus has now claimed 106 lives, the number of confirmed cases in China soaring past 4,500. Almost all the deaths have occurred in the Hubei province, while infections have been reported throughout Asia, as well as the U.S., France, Canada, and Germany. The numbers overseas have been much lower, and China has now restricted travel to Hong Kong. John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thank you very much, sir. The NHL returned from its all-star break. The Devils won along with the Capitals. Global news 24 hours a day on air and on Quick Take by Bloomberg, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Okay, Michael, thank you. 6:20 now on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. And this week we get earnings from some of the biggest names in the tech sector, starting today with Apple after the closing bell. Here are the preview. John Butler, senior telecom analyst for Bloomberg Intelligence. Nice to have you with us this morning, John. And since the last time Apple reported, the shares have jumped more than 30%. I guess today's the day we find out whether that was justified.
Thanks, Nathan. Yes, and good morning. So this really, the whole story here really does, in this quarter at least, revolve around the iPhone and how the new iPhone 11 performed. And also, I think people are going to be listening for any hint of an expansion of the iPhone product line as we get into next year. So the hope is we'll get a 5G iPhone in September and maybe a new low-cost replacement to the iPhone SE in March.
Well, what are you thinking in terms of iPhone sales? Because they have faced stiff competition and have been sort of sluggish in the past. And now we've heard a lot of talk about how they're trying to sort of shift the mix and offer lower-priced iPhones in future.
So they did with the latest release of the iPhone 11, which I think has done very well, by the way. I think that's part of the optimism here is they took the price down by $50 on the base model. So I think Apple learned their lesson on coming out with uber high priced iPhones and they walked that back a little bit, but they did a great job with the latest device. And, you know, I think going forward, we will see an expansion of the iPhone category in much the same way that over the years we've seen an expansion of the iPad category. So I feel good about the iPhone and what they're doing there. And, you know, I think we're poised for to hear good things this quarter about how the iPhone 11 sold through.
Is that going to be enough to fuel growth for Apple as a whole, or is it going to be relying on other devices in its portfolio?
Well, the answer is they rely on the whole portfolio, but one point I'd make about the iPhone is they're facing very easy year-ago comps in the sense that throughout the last fiscal year, going back over the past four quarters, iPhone sales have been negative. So the bar is set low for generating growth in the iPhone. So I think we're in for a good four-quarter run here looking ahead in terms of iPhone sales. But the other products are very important, the watch, the new AirPods, the content business, and some of the other new services. They all contribute to that top-line growth.
Of course, a lot of attention in the market right now is on coronavirus in China, and Apple, of course, has a lot of exposure to the Chinese market. How do you expect CEO Tim Cook to address that in the call today?
Yeah, so we just wrote about that yesterday. This is a big deal. Zhengzhou, which is where they make most of the iPhones in China, is about 300 miles from Wuhan. The center of the outbreak. It's hard to say what Tim Cook is going to say exactly about the issue, but I do think he does need to address concerns about what they can do and how quickly they can do it if you see factory closures in Zhengzhou or any of the other areas around China where they manufacture Apple products.
All right. We're looking forward to those quarterly results after the closing bell this afternoon. John Butler, senior telecom analyst at Bloomberg Intelligence. Thank you for the preview this morning. Bloomberg Intelligence provides unique real-time research and context on industries and all the market and government fact that impact business. Terminal customers can access the function at BI Go. And in early trading ahead of those earnings results, shares of Apple are up 0.5%. Right around the 310 level. As far as the broader market, S&P futures are higher by 5.5 points. Dow futures up 55. NASDAQ futures higher by 35 points. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by Land Rover. Life's an adventure. Experience it in the new Land Rover Discovery Sport. Visit your tri-state area Land Rover retailer for details on the new Discovery Sport. Land Rover, above and beyond.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130 to Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 991 to Boston. Bloomberg 1061 to San Francisco. Bloomberg 960 to the country. Sirius XM Channel 119 and around the globe. The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
And at 6:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Karen Moscow.
And I'm Nathan Hager. Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by New Jersey Institute of Technology, a top 100 national university in the latest U.S. News and World Report college rankings. Learn more at news.njit.edu.
And we're just about 3 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. U.S. futures are pointing to modest gains after yesterday's losses, but we're seeing no such recovery in Asia or Europe. Concern over the coronavirus is spreading as the death toll surpasses 100 and the number of identified cases rises to more than 4,500. We get the very latest from Bloomberg's Derek Wallbank in Singapore.
You have seen cases going around to countries around China. Most of those happen to be people who have come from China. So this is still very much a China-centric story. However, you are seeing the spread of this start cascading globally, seeing companies try to either A, evacuate people, or you're having companies worry about their supply chains, or companies saying either we're closing stores in the area, as Starbucks has, or saying if you've gone to China and you've come back from China, you shouldn't go to work for at least 14 days.
And now Germany has reported its first case of the virus. That's in addition to infections in France, Canada, and the U.S., though each country accounts for fewer than 10 cases.
There's concern the coronavirus could derail the global economy, just as global growth had been stabilizing. And joining us live with details is Bloomberg's John Tucker. Good morning, John.
And Karen, back during the SARS epidemic, Chinese economic growth slowed a full 2 percentage points. At that time, China accounted for a tiny portion of the global economy. Today, it's the world's second biggest economy and accounts for nearly one-fifth of global GDP. Economists agree the most immediate impact will be felt in Asian nations where the bulk of trade is with China. John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, John, thanks. Now, outside the virus, there's a focus on earnings today with more than two dozen companies in the S&P 500 reporting, including Apple. Here with a preview is Bloomberg's Jeff Bellinger.
Analysts think the news from the iPhone maker will be good. Forecasts are for broad-based strength all across Apple's product and services lineup. Bloomberg Intelligence says solid demand for the iPhone 11, along with robust sales of Apple Watches, AirPods, and services, likely drove top-line growth of 4.7%. Jeff Bellinger, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Jeff, thank you. S&P futures are up 7.5 points this morning. Dow futures up 64, and NASDAQ futures are up 41, and the 10-year Treasury up 5/32. The yield's 1.58%. And straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. And this is Bloomberg.
Okay, Karen, thank you. It's 6:33 on Wall Street, and this news update is brought to you by National Realty, NRIA, developers of high-return income-producing properties for investor partners. See them at NRIA.net. Now here's Michael Barr.
Thank you very much, Nathan. The third and final day for the defense in the impeachment trial of President Donald Trump begins today. Yesterday, even while suggesting that President Trump's contact with Ukraine may have been inappropriate, defense lawyers say that is not an impeachable offense. Harvard Law professor Alan Dershowitz says that he's done further research and concluded that, unlike what he said during the Clinton impeachment, non-criminal conduct does not justify impeachment.
My switch in attitude, purely academic, purely nonpartisan. Nor am I the only participant in this proceeding who has changed his mind.
Bloomberg's Ed Baxter reports the defense theme is pretty simple.
That the president was actually protecting the Constitution by not complying with subpoenas and providing witnesses.
Because there is and can be no basis in these articles on which the Senate can or should convict the president on what is alleged, the president must not be removed from office.
Trump defense attorney Robert Ray, but the report that the president directly told John Bolton to withhold Ukraine aid unless there was a Biden investigation has some Republicans, like Mitt Romney, rethinking things.
I think at this stage it's pretty fair to say that John Bolton has a relevant testimony.
Even Lindsey Graham says he'll reconsider, but would want to call other witnesses as well. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
NTSB investigators say the helicopter in which Kobe Bryant and eight other people died Sunday was not equipped with crash-proof voice and data recorders. NTSB member Jennifer Homedy says the pilot of the aircraft requested permission to climb to avoid a cloud layer.
Radar data indicates the helicopter climbed to 2,300 feet and then began a left descending turn. Last radar contact was around 9:45 a.m. and is consistent with the accident location.
Homedy says she is confident the cause of the crash would be determined. President Trump is set to unveil his administration's much-anticipated Mideast peace plan in the latest U.S. effort to resolve the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. President Trump plans to present the proposal alongside Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu at noon today in Washington. Global news, 24 hours a day, on air and on Quick Take by Bloomberg, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Thanks, Michael. It's coming up to 6:36 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. Here's John Stanshower.
Nathan, Roger Federer, for the second time in the last three matches, ever so close to losing at the Australian Open. He was 2 points from defeat in the third round in the quarterfinals against American Tennis Sandgren. Federer faced match point seven times, won all seven, another five-set victory. Now at age 38, he's on to his 47th career Grand Slam semifinal. Novak Djokovic right now leads Milos Raonic 2-0. They're 5-5 in the third. Women's quarterfinal victories for the top-seeded Aussie Ash Barty and the 21-year-old American Sophia Kennan. LeBron James with a lengthy Instagram post, his first comments on Kobe Bryant. He said he promises to continue Kobe's legacy. LeBron and the Lakers were scheduled to play the Clippers tonight. The game postponed as the Lakers continue to grieve. They are expected to play Friday at home against Portland. The Devils were in Ottawa. They won 4-3 in a shootout. Big storyline of the Super Bowl. Will Andy Reid get his first championship? Sixth all-time in wins, 15 times in the playoffs. Only once before did Reid even make it to the Super Bowl, and that was a Philadelphia loss 15 years ago. Now another chance with the Chiefs. The 49ers coach, Kyle Shanahan.
Oh, I mean, Andy's unbelievable. He's always been. And the more talent Andy gets, the better he even is. And he's got a lot of talent. He's got a great quarterback. He's got a lot of speed out there, and they deserve to be where they're at.
Shanahan, 21 years younger than Reid. Both teams met the media last night in Miami. With the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stanshower. Nathan?
Thanks, John. It's 6:37 on Wall Street, and today we get a reading on U.S. durable goods orders. Economists say today's report could retrace some of the prior month's decline, as it has been tough going for U.S. factories. Here with more is Bloomberg's Vinny Del Giudice.
In November, durable goods orders dropped for the second time in 3 months. Bloomberg Economics says turmoil at aircraft maker Boeing probably won't subside until mid-year. In the meantime, the easing of the trade dispute with China could provide a boost. Also on today's data agenda, CoreLogic home prices and the Conference Board's Consumer Confidence Index. Bloomberg customers can find a full list of economic indicators by typing EcoGo on their Bloomberg terminal. Vinny Del Giudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Vinny, thanks. It's just before 6:38 on Wall Street.
The following commentary is from Bloomberg Opinion.
Traders may hate treasuries at 1.6%, but what else is there? I'm Brian Chapata, a columnist for Bloomberg Opinion. So far, 2020 has proved to be a tricky year for Wall Street bond strategists. First, there was the U.S.-Iran conflict. Now, it's the coronavirus. In both cases, the immediate reaction was a massive rally in the U.S. Treasury market. In the case of Iran, the rally fizzled within 3 days. Some strategists are making a similar call now. Few dispute that if and when the coronavirus is contained, it'll be painful for treasuries. But until that happens, the question is this. If traders can't stomach 10-year treasuries at 1.6%, what's the alternative? U.S. stocks are barely off their record highs, corporate bond spreads are close to post-crisis lows, and other sovereign debt yields are even lower. In that context, maybe a 1.6% yield on 10-year treasuries doesn't look so bad after all. It's not what many expected, but the events of the first few weeks of the year were equally as unpredictable. I'm Brian Chapata. For more opinion, please go to Bloomberg.com/opinion or OPI and Go on the Bloomberg Terminal.
This has been Bloomberg Opinion.
You can hear Bloomberg Opinion commentaries every weekday at this time, and terminal customers can read more at OPI and Go. It is 6:39 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Small Business Report with John Tucker. Good morning, John.
Hey, good morning, Nathan. In 2014, after graduating from the University of Michigan, Carolyn Urena spotted the need for medical devices for emerging market countries where there are severe shortages of blood. She developed Hemofuse, which is helping save the lives of patients with internal bleeding.
It looks a lot like a giant syringe. Simply, when you pull the handle up, blood comes in through a filter. And when you press the handle down, it goes out through tubing into a blood bag where it can be hooked up and retransfused immediately. And since it's your own blood, there's no risk of disease transfer, no risk of rejection.
Urena and Jillian Hinker co-founded Sisu Global Health. Sisu is a Finnish word for perseverance in the face of adversity. They linked up with an accelerator program at Johns Hopkins University, which helped line up venture capital. With 17 employees and 5 products, they now hope to become the medical device company for emerging markets. And that's today's Bloomberg Small Business Report. I'm John Tucker. Nathan.
All right, John, thanks for that. As far as the broader market right now, U.S. equity futures markets holding on to their gains after losses overnight in Asia, and European indices erasing much of their gains this morning. S&P futures are higher by 7.5 points right now. Dow futures up 58. NASDAQ futures a gain of 41.5 points. 10 years up 5/32, yield 1.59%. 2-year treasury yield 1.41%. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Brought to you by Land Rover. Life's an adventure. Experience it in the new Land Rover Discovery Sport. Visit your tri-state area Land Rover retailer for details on the new Discovery Sport. Land Rover, above and beyond.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and on Quick Take by Bloomberg. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And futures are higher this morning. We go to the first word breaking news desk for today's morning call. Here's Bill Maloney. Bill, good morning.
And good morning, Karen. That's right. U.S. futures are bouncing after yesterday's sell-off, with Dow futures up 67 points. S&P's gained 10, while the NASDAQ futures rise by 48. The U.S. 10-year yield falls to 1.59%. Gold is trading lower by 2. And Shanghai remained closed overnight, while European markets are trading mostly higher right now. Back in the U.S. on the economic front at 8:30, durable goods orders, and at 10 o'clock, consumer confidence and Richmond Fed. After the bell last night, Whirlpool EPS beat estimates, and regarding some of the earnings this morning, 3M EPS missed estimates, UTX beat estimates, and Pfizer EPS also missed estimates. In deal news, BorgWarner to acquire Delphi in an all-stock deal. Delphi is trading higher by 47% in the pre-market. And wrapping things up, Garmin was raised to neutral at Credit Suisse, Beyond Meat cut to neutral at JP Morgan, and Uber rated new buy over at UBS. Live from the First of Breaking News Desk, I'm Bill Maloney. Karen?
All right, Bill, thank you. And to hear live breaking news over your Bloomberg, type Squawk on your terminal, S-Q-U-A-W-K. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, President Trump's lawyer suggested that his contact with Ukraine may have been inappropriate, but Trump's legal team is saying that's not an impeachable offense. Harvard Law Professor Alan Dershowitz also argued on the Senate floor last night that Democrats adopting the view that impeachment does not require a crime are acting like they're above the law. China's death toll from the coronavirus that is causing mounting global concern has risen. Bloomberg's John Tucker has more in this live report.
Michael, the coronavirus has now claimed 106 lives. The number of confirmed cases in China has soared past 4,500. Almost all the deaths have occurred in the Hubei province, while infections have been reported throughout Asia as well as in the U.S., France, Canada, and Germany. The numbers overseas have been much lower. China has now restricted travel to Hong Kong, stopping individual travels to the territory while closing some border checkpoints and restricting flights and train services from the mainland. John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak. Michael.
John, thank you very much, sir. The investigation continues into the helicopter crash that killed NBA legend Kobe Bryant and 8 others. Tonight's Lakers game at the Staples Center in Los Angeles against the Clippers has been postponed to a later date. The NHL returned from its All-Star break. The Devils won along with the Capitals. Global News 24 hours a day on air and on Quick Take by Bloomberg. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Okay, Michael, thank you. We're live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers studios where it's almost 6:50 on Wall Street. Time now to check what's going on in D.C., where some of the top stories include the U.S. raising its travel warning to China in light of the coronavirus outbreak. President Trump preparing to unveil his Middle East peace plan in the face of skepticism. And former National Security Advisor John Bolton reportedly raising concerns about the president's dealings with autocrats in his forthcoming book. Also making news, a final day of arguments from President Trump's lawyers in the impeachment trial after a day in which they mostly sidestepped the latest revelations. And for more on all this, we're joined by Bloomberg U.S. politics editor Kathleen Hunter. And of course, those revelations came in the reported book manuscript from John Bolton. What was the thrust of the White House counsel's argument from yesterday and so far?
Well, it seems as though, Nathan, that really it's been a bit bifurcated, the White House's response, in the sense that, you know, Trump surrogates, Trump himself, you know, people that go on television to represent him and on TV and on Twitter have been pushing back quite hard against the revelations that the New York Times reported on Sunday. And meanwhile, though, in the Senate, during the trial, the attorneys that are representing Trump there have been focused more on legal arguments against the impeachment charges, essentially arguing that the House Democrats haven't proved the case that they needed to prove in order to remove Trump from office, mostly sidestepping the latest Bolton revelations.
Is there any real dispute of the facts in the case, though, or is it just arguments over whether they reach a legal threshold that qualifies for removal from office under the Constitution?
Mostly in the Senate, it's been the latter that, you know, essentially the defense has argued, much as the defense argues often in regular court trials, that the prosecution, which in this case is House Democratic impeachment managers, haven't reached the legal threshold that they need to reach, haven't proven their case to a sufficient standard in order to remove the president from office.
Now, you mentioned the bifurcation between what's being laid out on the Senate floor and these details that we continue to get from, you know, first it was Lev Parnas, now John Bolton and these manuscript reports. What is that doing to the pressure on Senate Republicans, particularly to call Bolton potentially as a witness?
Well, it certainly increased the pressure on them. And it was very interesting yesterday to hear the initial responses from folks like Mitt Romney of Utah, Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, and Susan Collins of Maine, who are three moderate Republicans who had already said that they were potentially open to the idea of breaking with their party, siding with Democrats, and calling, voting to, you know, subpoena witnesses to come testify. They certainly indicated that they are openly considering that possibility now in light of the Bolton revelations. So I think it will be really worth continuing to watch them very, very closely in the coming days to see what they end up doing, because that question of whether there's going to be a movement or whether there is sufficient support in the Senate to subpoena witnesses, I think will come to a head potentially as soon as Thursday or Friday.
And I got to think that you're going to be watching whether there's continued pressure on the other side as well to call witnesses Republicans are looking for, like Hunter Biden. His name was mentioned specifically in the White House counsel's arguments yesterday.
Yeah, and this has been kind of the argument that Republicans have been trying to make all along, I think, which has really gotten new emphasis over the last, you know, 36 hours or so, which is, you know, it's a Pandora's box, essentially. You know, you want to call John Bolton Democrats? Okay, well, we'll turn around and we'll call Hunter Biden. We'll maybe even call Joe Biden. So I think that that's kind of the both implicit and explicit response that Republicans have been given, which is, you know, that once we start calling witnesses, there may be as many witnesses that could potentially be damaging to Democrats and their political prospects in 2020 as there would be for the president.
Now, of course, just before arguments get back underway this afternoon in the Senate, President Trump is going to be appearing alongside Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu to release details of his Middle East peace plan. What do we know about it so far?
Well, I think the broad sense is that the peace plan, which, you know, I think it's worth noting, has been long anticipated. As you said, you know, it's been something that's been in the works since Trump basically took office. And I think the sense is that while the details, you know, we still don't know a lot of the details, that it's likely to be very, very favorable to Israel. Trump has forged a close alliance with Netanyahu while he's been in office. And I think, you know, so I think that is broadly the expectation. We know he made moves to relocate the embassy, you know, from Tel Aviv earlier in his administration. So I think that that is the general expectation about the plan when it comes forth. I think that also it's worth noting the timing of this, not just for Trump, but for Netanyahu as well, given some of the domestic political dynamics that he's dealing with on the ground in Israel. This is kind of a welcome distraction at this stage for both the leaders.
Yeah, I mean, he's facing corruption charges at home, and there's a sense that perhaps the plan might not be so well received, given that the Palestinians say they've been essentially locked out of the process here.
Well, exactly. And I think that's the concern, is that the U.S. has kind of long had this straddled this line between, you know, being a supporter of Israel but trying to broker, you know, some kind of a peace agreement. And I think the concern is that perhaps the Trump administration with this plan might upset that balance and put the U.S. more firmly down on sort of what could be even considered an anti-Palestinian side.
And interestingly, after the reveal of the Middle East peace plan at the White House, President Trump is holding a rally this evening in New Jersey. What's happening there?
Yeah, so this is for Congressman Jeff Van Drew, who is a congressman who actually switched parties to protest House Democrats' impeachment vote. And, you know, essentially, in light of that, or some might say in exchange for that, he's getting some backing from Trump in an area where that could be politically helpful for him going into his reelection in November. And so it has that kind of a benefit for this particular congressman, but also for Trump. This area, even though it's in New Jersey, does encompass some Philadelphia suburbs and areas that could be influential in terms of the presidential race, because we know that Pennsylvania is going to be a very important battleground state. So I think this is a kind of a very niche political rally, but it's interesting the dynamics surrounding it.
Yeah, particularly with impeachment politics perhaps coming full circle here. Bloomberg U.S. Politics Editor Kathleen Hunter, thank you as always. Read more at Bloomberg.com or on the Bloomberg Terminal, and follow all the latest from the nation's capital on Bloomberg Radio in Washington at Bloomberg 99.1. And 105.7 FM HD2. Karen?
Nathan, thank you. 6:56 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Green Report. And here's Bob Moon.
Want to save the planet? Delete your email. If you're one of those people who use email as a life organizer, storing old files and photos from years past, preserving all those messages requires energy. Keeping the data centers up and running and cool consumes about 2% of the world's electricity, and that's expected to reach 8% by 2030, according to research by Hewlett-Packard Enterprise. Another study by the Paris-based nonprofit The Shift Project finds streaming services and the binge-watching they promote are also having a chilling effect on the environment, and not in a good way. Researchers estimate watching a half-hour streamed show emits 1.6 kilograms of carbon dioxide. The study found that 34% of streaming traffic comes from such services as Netflix, Amazon Prime, and Hulu. The second leading culprit, say researchers, is internet porn. They label it a waste of resources at all levels. That's the Bloomberg Green Business Report. I'm Bob Moon.
All right, Bob, thank you. It's a busy day for earnings. Again, we heard from Pfizer. It reported fourth quarter profit that missed analyst estimates and the midpoint of its 2020 forecast also missed. Shares are down 1.4%. And 3M said it would eliminate 1,500 jobs as part of a global restructuring. And BorgWarner agreed to acquire Delphi Technologies. We'll be watching all those shares throughout the day. Bloomberg Surveillance straight ahead with Tom Keene, Jonathan Farrow, and Lisa Abramowitz. For Nathan Hager, I'm Karen Moscow, and this is Bloomberg. Bloomberg.